that you see Muppet legs in every single Muppet movie.
You see Kermit the Frog riding a bike in the
Seriously,
great paper.
He tap dances with Fozzie the Bear at the El Slizo Cafe. Come on, people.
Come on.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Welcome back. This is Sue.
And this is Casey.
And we are here for season 3, the final season of Slings and Arrows.
The final act. This season covers probably the ultimate Shakespearean tragedy other than Hamlet, which is King Lear. Which is one of the plays I always have a hard time with because I'm a middle child. So it always breaks my heart in any fairy tale or play to see the two older evil sisters, and then the youngest one is just like, I'm so cute. I'm so demure.
I'm the youngest.
Well, you suck then, and you're all demure, aren't you?
Lear's one of my favorite plays. But yeah. I hope it's not because I'm the youngest. That would be weird. Anyway, we have a whole lot to cover in this episode of Anomaly Supplemental, so please don't get mad at us if we go a little bit longer than our usual half hour time frame.
35 minutes or
45.
Yeah.
60. Hopefully not 60.
I really hope not 60. We might get a talking to from Jen and Angela.
When life takes its toll, when fate treats you bad, you used to be king, and now you've been had. Alone with your fool, you think you'll go mad. It's nice to take a walk in the rain. A stomp through a storm is what I'd advise. When people you trust tell nothing but lies, and kidnap your friend and gouge out his eye. It's nice to take a walk in the rain. You say no daughters are evil plotters. A bit about a shower will keep you sane. When all has been said and all have been slain, it's good to take a walk in the rain for several hours. Helps to have a howl in the rain without your clothes on. Nice to take a walk in the rain.
I guess the best way to begin this season is talking about the success that's coming from the new Burbage Festival and everything that's coming out of that troupe. I mean, Richard Smith Jones is getting lauded by his fellow executives. Jeffrey's getting a lot of artistic merit. Mackers went to Broadway. Everything seems to be going really, really well. But the problem is that Jeffrey is starting to show signs of emotional distress. He looks out into an audience right before having to give a speech, and he just begins weeping uncontrollably.
And the next day, he's giving interviews. I think the BBC called over to interview him, and yeah. He just is having a hard time dealing with the success and the good reviews, which is a strange thing. And Richard says, I know he's an artist, but does he have to be an artist all the time? You know, for the first time since his mental breakdown, basically, things are going well and he can't handle it.
And, you know, he's back in a relationship with Ellen, but even then, they don't really know where they stand because Ellen, throughout the series, keeps making comments about how they're getting older. And their relationship just kind of to be in this state of limbo, and Jeffrey can't really comment on it at all. He's never really been committed in that relationship because he's so dedicated to his art. Also, after pretty much breaking up with Oliver in the previous season, he's now beginning to search him out. He's calling out for him, and you know, once you kick someone out of your life, you don't go around going, Oliver!
Well, Oliver pretty much did the same thing during Mackers that he did after Romeo and Juliet. Once the play was right, he disappeared and Geoffrey didn't see him again.
Yeah.
And now he's about to start Lear and he's trying to figure out who will play King Lear. And he's searching out Oliver to be that mentor still.
It's another thing coming with the success. I mean, he's getting all these famous actors calling him saying, I want to be Lear. Every single actor over the age of 60 is like, I want to be Lear. I want to be Lear. But he keeps thinking about this actor that he worked with named Charles Kingman, who is now in, you know, a nursing home.
Retirement center.
He keeps coming back to Charles talking about the play, and then he finally comes to the decision that he wants Charles to be his Lear.
I love the scenes where Geoffrey goes to visit him, and he's directing, is it Midsummer?
Yeah, it's Midsummer.
He's with the other people in the nursing home.
And I shall purge thy mortal grossness so that thou shalt like an airy spirit go. Bees blossom, cobweb, moth, and mustard seed.
And here come the fairies, all except mustard seed, who's in dialysis. So we'd better take a break.
Bravo.
Ah.
Hi, Charles. I'm not too early.
No, not at all, Geoffrey. Sorry to bring you all the way down here, but this is our last day of rehearsal.
When do you open?
Tomorrow or the next day.
Thank you.
Depending on who's alive.
It's really, really cute.
It really is.
He remarks on how nice it is to be doing the theater or doing theater for the love of it again.
You know, but there's also a catch or a little pitfall when Geoffrey decides to take on Charles as his Lear, because at the very end of the first episode, we see Charles shooting himself up with heroin. And I have been getting Kevin to watch Slings and Arrows with me. We just started the third season mm-hmm. a couple of days ago. When the first episode of season 3 ended, he went, ooh. And I was just like, oh, good, you're getting invested. This is a good thing.
So in the other company, I guess it's not really the young company this time, Darren Nichols, our favorite, is back.
Yay!
He's back from Amsterdam, and he's fallen in love with musical theater.
I must say, I've fallen in love with the musical genre. It's the art form of the common man. If you want to communicate something to the proletariat, cover it in sequins and make it sing. It's noisy, vulgar, and utterly meaningless. I love it.
All of his lines about musical theater. Like, I love musical theater so much. I do, but I also realize how ridiculous it can be.
Oh,
and
totally.
All of his comments are also ridiculous and also hit spot on.
So amazingly true and wonderful. So Darren is directing the musical written by a young Canadian playwright called East Hastings about a hooker named Lulu. It's so ridiculous.
Actually, one of my favorite parts of this entire series is when there's the rehearsal, the reading for King Lear, and they decide to do the exercise where one of the actors tells the story. Mm-hmm. It cuts back and forth between that and the musical.
The Tragedy of King Lear.
East Hastings, the musical.
Once there was an old king who, after many years of reign, realized he was at the end of his life.
This is the story of a junkie hooker named Lulu and her fight to kick the horse.
The king announced that he was going to divide up the kingdom amongst his daughters, Regan, Goneril, and his favorite, Cordelia. But first, he had a question for them. Which of you, shall we say, does love us most?
And so David, the gentle stockbroker slash John, he tells Lulu that he's leaving for Seattle. And after one last night of passion, he leaves her an envelope with 20 crisp $100 bills inside. So, Lulu has a choice.
So Cordelia has a choice. Does she flatter him like her sisters? Or does she risk everything and tell her father the truth.
Does she escape East Hastings, or does she get higher than she's ever gotten before?
I hate the needle, I hate the needle, I hate the needle, but I love the trip.
Lear's anger is boundless. He banishes Cordelia, he banishes the faithful Kent, and Goneril and Regan seize their opportunity.
We can kind of bring Ellen in with this too, because her best friend Barbara is a theater actor turned television star in a sci-fi show.
A lizard queen.
And apparently, like, the show has gotten her a lot of press and a lot of fame, but it's, like, not fulfilling because it's not a well-thought-out sci-fi show like Star Trek.
So Barbara has decided that she wants to go back to New Burbage and do Lear just to kind of get her credibility back, even though this whole time she's pushing Ellen to get into TV because that's where you make the money.
You know, Ellen's tempted by that because, again, she's in limbo with her relationship with Jeffrey in her career, and she also owes $27,000 to the government in back taxes. And we also discovered via episode 2 that Oliver hasn't crossed over.
He's still in actual limbo. He's trying to figure out how to move on, and he can't. He's just kind of stuck.
I love how disheveled Oliver looks in this season. Because during the first two, his hair is swept back, he's wearing the nice suit, and it looks pressed. But this season, everything looks kind of wrinkly, and his hair is just every which way, and he looks so cruddy, and you just feel for this guy, ghost, whatever.
Also at this point, I think Jeffrey discovers that Charles is shooting heroin.
He discovers that Charles is shooting heroin, and Charles is also dying of cancer.
Jeffrey tries to convince him to leave the show. You know, do you really want to die doing Lear? And Charles says, well, I'm going to die anyway. And he really, really wants to do this part. It's basically his dying wish. So Jeffrey has decided to do this for him and do Charles's Lear.
And that is a major risk. Once they begin rehearsals, he is just taking it out on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He's telling people how to do their lines, and they're not getting their rhythm right. And kind of mirroring Lear, he takes a lot of it out on the young girl playing Cordelia.
Mm-hmm. You know, at this point in dealing with or figuring out how to deal with what's going on with Charles and what's going on in his own relationship and his random crying, Jeffrey walks into a church and ends up going to a minister there for therapy, basically.
Most of my favorite moments come from the therapy sessions as well as the musical theater rehearsals, because it's through the therapy sessions that you see how Jeffrey not only sees Charles as a father figure, but he also saw Oliver as a mentor and father figure as well.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's, you know, just dealing with where they are in their life. They're getting older, dealing with their past, and also trying to figure out how to get to the future. In Charles's case, it's his inevitable death.
Right. And Richard finds himself frustrated with his situation too, just doing paperwork. And
yeah,
he is so discontent, I guess, in just pushing papers, just being a numbers guy, and he wants to be creative. So Jeffrey basically puts him in charge, I guess not really in charge, but kind of as a, he's basically acting as artistic director for Darren, sitting in on rehearsals, giving input, and making comments at the musical rehearsals, because Jeffrey hates musical theater.
As Darren Nichols says, Richard is the common man, and because he is a common man, he knows nothing of the theater.
So Richard paying attention to the musical means that he's basically shirking his duties in the administrative side. So Anna is getting really frustrated with him.
Yeah.
Having to do everything that actually makes the theater run.
Yeah, and that's tough too. She's getting sick of that. She's got a hot Bolivian hitting on her now.
But see, the thing that makes Anna so much different from Richard is that she actually understands and appreciates the Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And Richard, I guess, as the common man, if you want to put it that way, just doesn't comes really, really close.
Yeah.
He sees it a couple times, but he just, he doesn't understand really the art of the theater, and he's just in it to adore the spectacle and the lasers. I mean, he's a Darren Nichols kind of audience member.
Richard just also is like trying so hard to get into the creative mindset. He goes to Jeffrey and is trying to explain his thoughts.
Can I ask your advice about something?
I wouldn't.
Thanks. Okay, there's a problem with the musical. It's got to do with the way, you know, the whole thing is, you know, put together.
Structural problem?
Yeah, it's got to do with the segments of the story, you know, the segments.
The beats?
Yeah, well, they're in the wrong order. And because of that, you know, the whole path that you take with the in the musical, the whole thing.
The arc.
The arc. Well, it's wrong. And I think I know how to fix it.
They make his changes, much to Darren's chagrin, for the final preview performance. And people go nuts for it. And it opens, I think, later that night or the following night, and gets absolutely fantastic reviews.
You know, sadly, with the rise of East Hastings, King Lear is not doing well because the preview period is bad. It's terrible.
It's a disaster.
Charles is dropping his lines. He doesn't know his cues.
There's one scene that Maria, the stage manager, has been keeping a chart of all the times he's messed up, missed a line or missed a cue or forgot his blocking. And it looks like he's made over 50 mistakes in one preview performance.
Which is bad.
Real bad. They just keep going. And I think it's Jeffrey who says he's not playing Lear, he's living Lear. And then shoots him up with heroin at intermission for the pain. And Charles comes back and does it really, really well after intermission.
There, you see. He can do it.
For 10 minutes a night. It's a 3-hour show.
No, it's not. It's 2 hours 56.
And the thing with Jeffrey is that he's not playing the director role anymore. Because he's trying to honor a dying man's wish. For the past 2 seasons, he's been like, okay, you're being replaced and we're putting the understudy on.
Right.
Go.
The thing is, Jeffrey doesn't want to tell the rest of the company what's going on. Charles made him promise not to tell them that he's dying of cancer. So they're trying to rationalize Charles's behavior without knowing what's really going on. So a rumor starts that he's an alcoholic. You know, when he's acting angry as Lear, he's actually getting angry as Charles. They don't know how to handle it.
And then, you know, opening happens, and Charles isn't there because he fell down and he couldn't get up.
So they cancel opening night, and Jeffrey has gone to find him and then stays with him that night. He's there trying to make sure he's okay and nurse him back to health and make sure that he hasn't hurt himself. And it seems to Jeffrey that Charles is having a conversation with Oliver.
Oh, it's not seems. It is.
But he's confused at first because that's never happened. No one's ever seen Oliver before. And it freaks him out.
The next day, Oliver says, why does he see me now? Pretty much because he has one foot in the grave.
Mm-hmm. That following morning as well, Barbara goes to see Richard over Jeffrey's head and tells him falsely that Charles is a raging alcoholic.
Yeah.
And that's why he wasn't at opening the night before. Jeffrey, when confronted by Richard, kind of plays along with it at the beginning because he still doesn't want to tell the truth. But Anna figures it out.
Charles is sick.
Yeah.
He has cancer.
Colon.
Oh, God. It's pretty far gone, eh?
How do you know?
Runs in my family. My father, my grandfather.
You can't tell anyone about this.
I can help. I know how to keep his strength up. I know about timing his medications. That's what's affecting his brain, not the cancer.
Anna, this is a flat-out 100% mess. Don't get yourself involved.
Not everybody gets to do what they want before they die. But they should.
But Richard has still decided that he is going to move East Hastings into the Rose Theater and postpone and move Lear into the 100-seat studio theater. So Jeffrey now has a week to get everyone together to make sure Charles is going in the direction he should be and restage and reblock as East Hastings is using its week with its sold-out run to make it a bigger show with lasers and full choreography and now filling a 2,000-seat theater.
This is my call. So you can have your week, but I am moving King Lear into the studio theater.
What?
Yes, I'm replacing it with East Hastings. There's an insatiable demand for tickets. It's hot, so that's the financially responsible thing to do.
Okay, so you want me to move King Lear out of a 2,000-seat theater into a theater with 150 seats, with half the stage and with a third of the lights? It means I'm going to have to completely reconceive the show.
You know what? It's not your call. And I am not the villain here.
Oh, East Hastings. Just when you hear the story and then you watch a little bit of it, you're just like, how is this popular?
Yeah, I think that a lot when I go to the theater.
As you should. Yes, by the way, if you haven't read Sue's blog on the stage, it's called By the Ghostlight, right?
Yes.
Yes. Where she posts reviews on the stage. It's magnificent.
Thank you. That's sweet. What happened?
They switched venues.
Okay, episode 5.
Due to the success of East Hastings, Richard is becoming, excuse my French, but a bigger and bigger ass.
All he can think about is this musical and marketing it and merchandising it. And he feels this sense of ownership about it. But, you know, as executive director of a theater festival, you have more stuff to do.
You know, also the tragic flaw of Richard, and you kind of get to see this at the very, very, very end of Slings and Arrows, is that he just wants to be a part of the cool kids club. And that's what happens. He makes the shift from hanging out with the Shakespeare kids to hanging out with the musical theater kids. Mm-hmm. He's acting 20 years younger than he really is.
He's smoking pretty much hot with them.
He's pretty much given up all responsibility with his day job.
And everything just really starts falling apart.
Yeah.
Just like it does for King Lear. The classical company, we see them moving into their tiny, tiny little dressing rooms that are super depressing, that have a desk light and a mirror. Barbara and Ellen get into a huge fight. Ellen quits everything and goes off to do a ridiculous television show, a science fiction crime fighter show.
Oh, this is my favorite description ever. The talent agent or whatever describes it as prime suspect in space.
It's so ridiculous.
It is.
I mean, they're still trying to get in Lear before Ellen leaves, and they're trying to open again, this time in the studio theater. Everyone comes back for the second opening night, and Charles is a complete disaster. He mixed up his meds, he can't remember the lines, he's kind of wandering around and staring into his mirror in his dressing room. Jeffrey decides to start the play and then convinces Charles that he actually is Lear.
Not smart!
It gets to Lear's entrance and Charles can't go on. So because Jeffrey still starts weeping when he's in front of large crowds, he makes Richard go out and cancel the opening night for the second time.
Basically, that leads to the board demanding Jeffrey's resignation. Richard is, I think 3/4 of him doesn't want Jeffrey to quit, because that's where the success of the festival has come from. But at the same time, I think a quarter of him doesn't really mean it, because a lot of trouble has come from Jeffrey as well.
Right. Throughout the whole thing with Charles at the second opening night, Richard discovers that he's on heroin. And he says to Jeffrey that after the cancellation, I can't believe that you have this addict in this show. And that's when Jeffrey tells him the truth about what's going on. And Richard doesn't get it and yells at him some more. And that's when Jeffrey looks at him and asks are you really just a numbers guy? Which, after all of this stuff with these Hastings, infuriates him. And that's when Richard then cancels Lear completely.
Are you just a numbers guy? Don't you get it?
I get that you lied to me. You and Anna. I'm canceling.
No, Richard, we can make this thing work.
It's canceled.
Richard.
It's over.
All right, well, let me tell Charles.
Fine. Be my guest. Use my phone.
Well, I can't right now. He's over at the hospital having a brain scan. I'm going over. I'll tell him then.
Good. And hey, while you're there, why don't you see if you can snag one of those brain scans for yourself?
In episode 6, Jeffrey signs the resignation letter, and he's just getting a lot of feedback from everybody, from Anna saying, no pasarán, which means never surrender in Spanish. And then there's also Frank and Cyril, who are some of my favorite characters.
I love them so much.
They are. They're so cute. And they kind of act like the chorus members throughout the series. And finally, it's like with this season, they're taking part of the plot. And they're telling Jeffrey, no, you can't quit.
No.
Frank?
I've given my whole life to this place. I've been here ever since it was under a tent. I've played every duke, lord, and first messenger, everyone in the canon. Now, finally, after all that, this year I made it to Broadway.
Sean Penn finally got to see our Shakespeare, thanks to you.
Thanks to you, yes.
You can't leave.
I'm sorry. I am.
And it's not really until Jeffrey goes to see Charles in the hospital, he discovers that Charles has made a complete remission. Charles invites him out for bowling. They start talking about the play again, and Charles has this epiphany and says, I can do this. I can play Lear. We need to make this happen. You know, Jeffrey's a little tense at first, but Charles is just like, I need to do this. Jeffrey, being the nonprofit guy that he is, that magically makes things work, goes to his minister therapist, sets up a venue in the church, basically gets all the cast back together, including Ellen, and they're able to get a small audience to the church. Now the problem is Charles is ready to go. He's apologized to the cast. The cast is ready. But poor Jerry was the innocent bystander. He goes to the bar to announce that his wife has given birth during a confrontation with Frank and Cyril and Nigel of East Hastings. Nigel decides to take a beer bottle and look threatening and hits Jerry in the face. He can't really say his lines because, you know, he just got his stitches out and
his diction is just not there.
Ellen and Marie are just like, someone has to take over for Jerry, and Jeffrey is trying to think of everybody else except him.
He's even saying that Jerry can walk through the part, do the blocking, and that Maria, the stage manager, should yell out the lines from backstage. Just anything so that he does not have to go on.
But it's also during this that you realize why he's nervous about it, because the theater is his passion, and it started with acting, and he points to Oliver.
Well, you're the one who's made me terrified of ever getting back on a stage. You ruined my career, you ruined my life, and you made me cry in front of strangers.
I wonder if there are still programs.
Oh, don't you dare leave.
I've heard this monologue, and you're not doing it very well.
Oh, that's hilarious. Now listen to me.
Oh, isn't that your cue? Oh,
patient. As you're watching Lear being performed, everyone's just being swept away because it returns to Jeffrey's original vision back at the very, very beginning of season one, because it's nonprofit. They stole the costumes.
Right, and their lighting is whatever they have available, and their dressing rooms are the kitchen. The storm, the sound for the storm, is the Bolivian band that can't get home because of a coup in their country, and they've got rain sticks and a sheet of tin.
Yeah.
And it's completely non-spectacle. It's just the true text, the true play.
I would say it was a success. It's not a hit in the respect that East Hastings was, but it is a very successful show.
Yeah, they continue to show shots of the audience being affected by the play. People are crying in the audience and really being affected by the performance, which is what really is all you can ask for. And it's so appropriate that Jeffrey has to go on as Kent, being the moral center of the play, as they call it, because the whole reason that he's doing this Lear for Charles is because it's his friend's wish, his friend's dying wish. And everything he's done throughout the season has really been to help Charles.
And Kent in the play is also just the most loyal out of all the characters in King Lear. I mean, apart from the Fool and Cordelia, Kent is pretty much at Lear's side at all times.
After the play, things are starting to get repaired. Ellen and Jeffrey get back together, and Ellen and Barbara are friends again. But some things are changing for good. Anna and Richard are done. Anna ends up quitting.
Well,
or forces Richard to fire her.
In a way, it's her final mercy to Richard, because she starts crying and she says, "You were so close to being human." And that triggers it, and he says, "Anna, you're fired."
A really touching, interesting moment is when Charles is back in his dressing room after the performance, and he sees Oliver in his mirror and looks up and asks, "Any notes?" And that's when he passes away.
Oh, that makes me want to cry.
I know. Shortly thereafter, we see Jeffrey back in therapy. Oliver is not there. Oliver has moved on. He's found his purpose that lets him move on. And Jeffrey is telling his therapist, by guise of pretending Oliver is across the room from him, which this time he's not, how everyone is moving on.
Let me see. Anna is finally taking a vacation in Bolivia. Well, apparently there's some kind of counter-revolution going on, but I'm told that Anna has taken up with the leader of the revolutionaries, so... Richard? Oh, God, well, Richard... Richard is directing next season. Yeah. Oklahoma. In fact, he has announced his intention to work his way through the entire canon of Rodgers and Hammerstein. God help us all. Oh, Ellen, well... Ellen is being sued by the producers of that TV show, and she kind of said, more or less said, you know, go ahead, take it all. So, they did. They took her house, which is why we're moving to Montreal. Well, I kind of thought that I would resurrect my old theater company. Theater Sans Argent. Well, I think it could work, you know, it's bilingual for a start.
Could work.
I'm not quite done. And as for Charles, well, I would imagine you know all about him, and thanks for all of that. And as for you, I want to thank you, and I want to curse you, and, I have to say goodbye now, Oliver. I love you. I wish you could be here today.
Oh, so sad.
I know. Let's see. Let's go ahead and talk about William Hutt. William Hutt is the amazing actor who played Charles Kingman, also the Lear of this season. And he was a brilliant stage actor in Canada and predominantly in Shakespeare. You can find interviews with him on YouTube and other video sites. It's basically a one-on-one lecture with, you know, reading the text and finding the rhythm. And I was listening to Downstage Center with Howard Sherman, and he was interviewing Bob Martin, who was a creative producer on Slings and Arrows. And Bob Martin was talking about how they got William Hutt.
And we're editing now. We're very excited about season 3, because Bill Hutt is really Canada's greatest actor, is in the third season. We do Lear. Hutt did a seminal Lear that was never recorded. So in the third season, he performs Lear, and he's stunning. So we're very, very excited about season 3.
The final season of Slings and Arrows aired 2006, and that's also when it wrapped. And William Hutt passed away a year later. So I think the fact that they asked this great Shakespearean actor to come in and record at least pieces of one of his greatest performances, I think is a great tribute and a great testament to his work.
If you have a chance, we do both highly recommend Downstage Center if you're interested in theater at all. Howard Sherman more recently also did an interview with Stephen Wumet when he was on Broadway in La Bette last season. And they do talk about Slings and Arrows quite a bit in that podcast as well, because obviously Oliver was very, very integral to that show.
In the same podcast, Bob Martin mentioned briefly, I don't know if like anything came from it, but he briefly mentioned probably making a transfer from Slings and Arrows to maybe America. So I don't know how that all went down or if it actually happened, but I am interested on your thoughts of an American translation, because everything in English needs to be translated for America.
I don't know. I think Canada is pretty close.
Did you just say Canada?
I did.
I've been thinking about it, and I don't want an American translation. I want it to be transferred over to the British Isles and see how they handle it, because, you know, they did it in South America.
Right.
In Portugal, in which it's called Som e Furia.
Sound and Fury. It's amazing. I don't know how you found this.
I was bored one day. And, like, I went to Wikipedia and I was just like, huh.
Oh,
and
Wikipedia.
I looked it up and I was just like, oh my gosh. It's like, it's pretty much a direct translation.
It's on YouTube if anybody wants to check it out. And, I mean, I obviously don't speak Portuguese, but I can tell you the music's the same. I can tell you that the Portuguese equivalent of Jeffrey fixes the toilet in the very first episode of the season. And it's really, really amusing.
Ok, pessoal. Tem boas notícias. Consertei a privada. E agora, como recompensa para mim mesmo, eu gostaria de passar a cena da tempestade. E aí, Marcelinho, podemos?
Mete bala.
Mete bala. É isso que o diretor gosta de ouvir, hein?
What I like how they kind of differentiate from the original source material is that the cinematography is very different. In a way, it's a little bit darker.
Yeah, the casting is very different, too.
I don't know how I feel about Anna looking a little bit like Grandma.
Yeah.
I was not happy about that. But yeah, I really think, especially since the RSC, the Royal Shakespeare Company, is so big in the British Isles, I don't see why Slings and Arrows can't transfer over there. Speaking of which, we got a comment from Meds, who is the voice of our podcast.
Hi, Casey. Hi, Sue. Hello, Anomaly Supplemental podcast people. This is Meds from martiancreative.com/au. And Waffle On Podcast. I've just come back literally from my vacation. I haven't even unpacked yet. And the first thing I did when I got back was turn my iPhone on, because I don't take any media devices with me on my vacation. And I've got about 300 emails. And also my TV's not working. So what a thing to come home to. Anyway, one of my emails on here, well, actually two of them, was one about Anomaly. One of them. Of course, Anomaly's covering ET, so I've quickly done a comment for them. And the other one, of course, I got a tweet from Casey saying, send us a comment about anything, and in Spanish. Well, that's not going to happen, because I'm an Englishman. It just sounded like I'm trying to order Anomaly abroad, and that would not be good for anybody. What can I say about Anomaly Supplemental? Well, look, I've loved the last couple of episodes. The Sling and Arrows program, you know, it just sounds awesome. It really does. It everything about it sounds brilliant. Love the clips you've played, and your description of the episodes is just bang on. And I didn't get a chance to do it before I left, but I'm gonna go searching on the old internet for the DVD, for the box set. So if there is box sets out there, please let us know. I'm not too sure if they're available in England yet. But I'm loving the reviews of this show. It's brilliant. What do I want to see in the future? Are you two going to do a Doctor Who review? Maybe, you know, I'd love to see a female, just purely female, no men involved, just females, view of Doctor Who, because Doctor Who in the past has always been really a fairly male-dominated fan program. I'm talking about Classico here. And it's only really from the past 6 years that it's got a great fan base of female listeners, and rightly so. Brilliant to see. Now, Casey, I know you're a huge fan. I'm going to be recording with you this weekend, in fact, regarding Doctor Who. I'd love an anomaly episode, whether it be a big old episode of Anomaly or an Anomaly supplemental on Doctor Who. That would be fantastic. Anyway, I'm going to sign off here because I've got a hell of a lot to do, including trying to find out why my TV is not working. Please keep up the good work, ladies. You do a fantastic job, and I will speak to you very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
So, I did pull up Amazon UK, and I searched for Slings and Arrows, and it's available, but they're all Region 1. So I don't know if Region 2 DVDs exist for Slings and Arrows, but I wouldn't know where else to check for them. But a box set does exist in Region 1, as well as individual seasons.
Yeah.
And the other thing I came across, which was kind of interesting, was that there was apparently a series of Star Trek The Next Generation novels that used Slings and Arrows as their title.
Now that is awesome.
Yeah. I don't know if they have anything to do with anything, but I might be reading those now. Meds also wants us to do a Doctor Who episode.
I know. I've been trying to convince the Anomaly ladies for years. I am going to try my best to get a Doctor Who podcast on either the Mother podcast or on this one.
We also have a comment from our lovely Jen.
To be or not to be. That is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing, end them. To die, to sleep no more, and by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished. To die, to sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. And now I'm bowing. Thank you, Sue and Casey, for allowing me to demonstrate my superior acting abilities. Angela and I are very glad that the two of you are a part of the Anomaly feed. Good day.
I just want to thank everyone briefly, even if you haven't left a comment, even if you have only heard one episode of our Slings and Arrows podcast and didn't understand a word of it. Thank you so much for at least listening. We are going to cover a little more genre-friendly stuff. I mean, we have Labyrinth coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to Skype with you girls and talk Jim Henson's Labyrinth.
As usual, if you'd like to send us a comment on anything, all of the information for our contact is at the end of the podcast. You'll once again hear the dulcet tones of Simon Meddings. To finish up the podcast, we'd like to play the two different closing songs that you hear throughout the series. One is through almost every episode, and the second is the one that you only hear at the end of the very last episode of the final season.
The first of which is called The Understudy, and the second of which is I Played the Part.
So thanks everybody for listening, and we will catch you next time.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Sue.
And you have been listening to Anomaly Supplemental.
But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248 419
geek. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com, or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Oh, say that three times fast.
Only understudy, I can't go on tonight. I'm drinking with my buddy, I'm getting good and tight. Before they raise the curtain, I'll be higher than a kite. So call the understudy, I can't go on tonight. Tell the cast and crew to break a leg, break a leg. Throw me out and up the bloody keg, bloody keg. I need to ease the pain that life can bring,
life can bring.
And liquor is what will hit the spot, the play is not the thing. So call the understudy, I think it's only right. My diction will be muddy, I'll ever find me light. Before the intermission, I'll be busy on a sprite. So call the understudy, I can't go on.
He can't go on.
I won't go on.
He shan't go on.
I can't go on tonight. Damn right. I should have been an actor. Such talent have I got. I'm brilliant at pretending I'm someone that I'm not. When I was very small, they sent me off to school to learn to read and write and recite the golden rule. I wasn't very clever nor the least bit smart, but I acted like a scholar and I played the part. I played the part.
You played the part.
To great acclaim.
To great acclaim.
I got an A on every paper and I couldn't spell my name. I played the part.
You played the part.
And that was it.
He did his bit.
Nobody knew I was a lazy little git.
Lazy git.
When I was 17, they sent me off to war. They stuffed me in a palace. I didn't know a rifle from a cherry tart, but I acted like a soldier and I played the part. I played the part.
He played the part.
I gave them heck.
He gave them heck.
They put a stripe above my elbow and a medal round my neck. I played the part.
He played the part.
And that was that.
He laid them flat.
Nobody knew I was a scaredy little cat.
Scaredy cat.
I played the part of the loyal husband. While I kept a little cutie safely hid.
Safely hid.
I played the part of the trusty employee. And I had the foggiest notion what I did.
Rotten kid.
When I have come to pass, they'll send me to my fates. At heaven's pearly gates, that is where St. Peter waits. I've been a sneaky devil from the very start, but I'll act like I'm an angel, and I'll play the part. I'll play the part.
He'll play the part.
I'll knock 'em dead.
He'll knock 'em dead.
I'll put a harp between my knees and a halo top my head. I'll play the part.
He'll play the part.
And do it well.
He will excel.
And I'll be sent with the other actors straight to hell.
Straight to hell.
I'll be sent with the other actors straight to hell.
I'll go to hell.
I hate the needle, but I love the thrill. She's so high.